as a celebrity entrepreneur, both of you, it is difficult to harmonize our lives. You talked about it was supposed to be a time when you're not going to be in a hotel room. Virgil knows what that feels like and has to deal beyond himself with the people, the celebrities that he works with besides being a celebrity himself. So I kind of want to get into harmony, not balance, that I believe one of the most difficult things as a celebrity entrepreneur is to create some semblance of harmony in our personal, in our celebrity life, and in our entrepreneurial journey. And both of you have harmonized all three of those in an exceptional way. What were some of the tips or ideas that came to mind? I'll start with Mr. Maslow, since we normally start together.
You know, we speak about harmony, we speak about balance or a lack thereof pretty frequently. And I think that's it's a good lesson for me to even remind myself of right now, which is it's never going to be in perfect unison or perfect harmony or perfect balance. But so long as you strive to pay attention to the different aspects that help you out every day and focus on those, it's a little bit easier. And one of those aspects for me is fitness, for example. So sometimes I can maintain, okay, I've got a great day going on, got great sleep last night, and so I can go and just get a decent workout. Doesn't need to be a great one because everything else is in such harmony and such abundance that I don't need to make up for it here. Whereas right now, when so many things are pulled elsewhere, that's one of the things that I'm focusing more on. I'm actually going into the gym and getting harder workouts right now as a means of counteracting some of the other stress. I think that, you know, having these tangible things, these non-negotiables, you know, help every single day to be able to kind of turn up the volume on the ones you can control, sometimes as a means of balancing out or harmonizing with the ones that you can't. And again, fitness is one of those things that is tangible. I can control how hard I go, how long I go. And it's definitely something that's helping balance all these other stresses I didn't anticipate this week.
I hate to take the context and the content of how hard you go and how long you go out of the context.
Either way, whichever way you look at it. So you can't be wrong here. You're right with every tingle analogy.
I will discuss that with your fiance. It'd be beautiful. Anyway, Virgil, you have been working, you know, with some of the world's greatest golfers in understanding this idea of harmony, and you see golfers get out of harmony and it impacts their career. From David Duval to many others, Tiger Woods, it wasn't their golf game that created the problem. It was the harmony. What are some of the aspects that you don't control? And then do the players blame you when they're not harmonizing the outside stuff into the golf game? It's your fault that they're not playing well.
Well, PGA Tour players and the best players in the world, they have one unique trait, which is the only person that's rooting for them is them. So they have to have an enormous amount of self-confidence. And oftentimes that self-confidence needs to wear a cloak of they can't be broken down. So sometimes they'll pass the buck, even though they know that it's them. It's easier for their confidence to pass it on so that they can stay in the belief that they're impervious to this. But at the end of the day, we're always sitting here thinking, what's going on? Why? There's so many moving parts, and most of it starts with expectations. When you have a life that you've worked really, really hard to be awesome at something, and then you get the opportunity to put it to the test, and all of your best preparation and all the best work that you've ever done comes out, and you didn't have it. Things didn't go the way you wanted to. Adaptability becomes really critical. But if you haven't prepared for your first wave of expectations to be crushed, that's the real challenge, is that if you don't have multiple layers of expectations and game plans to achieve those expectations, you oftentimes get swept away in the disappointment of your very best effort not coming to fruition early. And like Mike Tyson said, you know, everybody's got a good game plan until you get punched in the face. And, you know, at the end of it all, what are we staring at? Adaptability is really critical for harmony, because that's what allows you to be unaffected by things that don't really are in your control.
James, staying comfortable and confident. with all the things that occur on the road. Now, you're getting it at home right now, but normally you deal with this kind of shit every day on the road because it's completely uncertain. All types of different variables can change. You're an amazing performer as well as an entrepreneur. A lot of times we don't talk about your own confidence. Does it, after all these years, waver, determined upon external circumstances, or are you confident no matter what circumstances? I know you got sick on the road. There's a few things that may diminish other people's confidence. How do you deal with staying comfortable and confident to perform your best?
At this point, I think it's fair to say that I maintain a relatively high level, regardless of situation. And that's just decades of what Virgil's talking about, that practice, that confidence, that belief in myself. But I wouldn't say that it's entirely unwavering. I think that it does waver. When you get sick, like I was, I mean, the whole band and I got sick for most of the European tour. I had a sinus infection that made it hard for me to hear, which is a huge part of what allows me to do my job, and then hard for me to sing, are the two most important things to do my job for at least 4 out of the 6 weeks while I was over there. You know, there's even this aspect of the curveball of this week where I'm used to being on the road and in a hotel, but I know my purpose of being there. I'm barely sleeping there because I'm going out to play a show, or I'm there to sleep specifically for the day to recuperate and recover to play the next show. Versus now, the not knowing of when I'm going to be leaving here and go back home. And so in either case, whether it's sick or the world is just throwing a curveball as to the schedule and such, I think what really helps my confidence is maintaining all of the other aspects that keep me going. The health, the focus, the scheduling. So even this week, one of the things, like my confidence wavers when I don't know what to do or where to go. So then I have to, as the entrepreneur, go back to, well, let's create the schedule. Let's create the new routine. And that's something that can be really, really difficult when your routine is thrown off. But I've had a lot of practice at it, being, you know, somebody that travels the world, you guys as well, constantly. So I think what helps the wavering to be less so when it comes to the confidence is just knowing I've been here before, I got through this before, and going back to the routine and back to the fundamentals, which is, all right, I'm going to go to sleep tonight, writing down everything I need to do tomorrow, scheduling in all the things that I can account for tomorrow. I mean, it truly, being prepared, I guess, is the simplest way to put this. Being prepared helps with that confidence to stay as sturdy as possible.
That will definitely commensurate with the fact I'm completely insecure about doing this show this morning because I'm not prepared. But more importantly, Virgil, you and I have an interesting relationship that we both try to help our own kids and young kids. And so we look at a James Maslow who was very famous at a very young age and over decades have created non-negotiable behaviors and frameworks and mindset. And he spends minutes and moments, as he said, outside of this harmony and confidence in his life, regardless of being stuck in a hotel. He just says, cool, I get to sleep better here and work out better. And I'm going to make things happen that I can't make happen when I'm at home. So I find it very challenging to know what I know and try to convey that to my own son. I know you're one of the world's greatest golf coaches and your son's a golfer. So I couldn't imagine how that relationship goes. How do we communicate some of these lessons to younger people that don't have the experience or awareness that a James Maslow has later on in his career to, or the golfers that you deal with, like the Snedekers and the Furyks and all these mature players that, you know, they're already aware. They don't show you resistance when you give them a piece of advice. No, by the way, nobody likes feedback in the present. I just want to give you that nugget. No, nobody. I don't care if you're a world champion. There's a lapse of time between feedback and acceptance. In between that
makes resistance. A lot of sense.
Yeah. So how do you deal with that, Virgil? Because I mean, I know you're working with a young amateur number one player playing at the Masters. I'm sure he has his moments of being what I call the dumbest human beings on earth, teenagers.
Well, that's a fascinating question because it has so many different layers. Like sometimes when they're struggling, almost always it has something to do with expectations, but sometimes it's not their expectations that they're struggling with. It's other people's expectations. So one of the first things that I'm trying to get all my players to do is to what are their controllables? Control your controllables first, and then begin the process of coping with the interferences. Because at the end of the day, your self-image is ultimately your total, your grand sum total of your thoughts of yourself, all the positives minus all the negatives. Well, the more interference that you put in front of your self-image, the more that reduces what you believe that you can do. So understanding that you can't outperform your self-belief, you're constantly trying to work on the skills that allow you to have more control over more controllables. And that then allows you to perform at the highest level. And it's stacking the 1% a day wins that you don't realize are actually making the huge difference until all of a sudden those 1% changes over a long period of time have turned you into a very competent professional at whatever it is that you're doing. And when you start stacking competencies on top of one another, your confidence can't help but grow because there's much less things that can interfere with what your God-given talents are. And that is really my trick, is I'm just trying my very best to encourage people to chase their own best version of greatness. Don't try to be Tiger Woods. Try to be the best version that you could ever imagine of yourself each day. And if we keep stacking those things, we have no idea how good we can be. And that's one of my favorite lines, which is, because there is no such thing as perfect, there is no limit to how good you can be. And that is really important for people, because if you don't know that there's a limit, you just keep going.
I love that.
I love that.
Roger Bannister proved that as well in the 4-minute mile, when they told him it was humanly impossible to break the 4-minute mile, that it was absolutely genetically, biochemically, bioanatomically an impossibility. And he refused to believe that. And within weeks, multiple people broke the 4-minute mile. James, for you, what was one of the 4-minute miles? What was something when you were young that you may not have believed was possible, and or others didn't believe was possible, and you proved that it was?
It's a great question. First, I want to make a comment on that. What you just said is that after he broke the 4-minute mile, within weeks, other people did as well. So isn't that interesting? Once we as humans see something that was impossible moments ago done, it all of a sudden becomes possible to us. I think that's really beautiful. And I think it goes to show that you actually share your gifts with people when you live up to being the best version of yourself as you possibly can. When you break expectations and records, all of a sudden you give other people a real tangible, not just hope, but belief in themselves. You create an ability for other people to succeed as well. I think that's really, really the coolest observation that I've taken from what you're talking about there.
You know, James, to me, it was $1 billion. Like, I literally, when I was young, thought it was impossible to make $1 billion.
Yeah.
And then look how many people do it.
It's pretty wild, right? It's crazy that a billionaire seems so, when I was younger too, it's like maybe, far from normal when I was younger.
Right.
A billionaire, today. Whereas now it is extremely normalized. It's like, oh, we've met several, if not many in our line of work, billionaires. So that's a really, really great question. But look, one of the first 4-minute miles, so to speak, for myself was growing up, you know, just singing and thinking about this concept of getting paid to do it. And then in my mind, at a younger age, there was this kind of hope, but impossibility that I could sing and act and like actually have a good living. Once that started happening, you know, at 17 years old, I started making enough money, more money doing this thing, singing and acting, than I'd made doing anything else. And all of a sudden, that 4-minute mile was my reality. All of a sudden, it was like, wait a second, I don't have to keep working this other job to support this hobby of mine. Now, this hobby is making me more money and is actually the more direct line to success and paying my bills and having a nice life than anything else that I can imagine. That was the first shift for me. That quote-unquote 4-minute mile was like, wait a second, this isn't any longer this pipe dream. It's almost counterintuitive. Like, this is the most direct path to wealth for me at this point. That was a huge shift.
I love it. What I love about all three of us is we get paid to do what other people pay to do. And yeah, that's a blessing in itself. What was your 4 minute mile, Virgil, or one of your players' 4 minute miles that was a breakthrough?
Well, I would say from on my end, I'm in a profession that the older you are, the wiser and better you are in coaching the game. And when I was young, I was told that I couldn't possibly at age 26 coach somebody to win on the PGA Tour. And I can only get somebody to a certain level. Well, when the first player that I coached won on the PGA Tour immediately after seeing me for the first time, that let me know that those were other people's limitations that they put on the industry, not on me. And all of those things, age had nothing to do with the ability to encourage, motivate, and really elevate people to a place that they didn't know they could already get to. And I think that that's when I realized that there was no limit. I felt limitless that day, because at some point I was told that I couldn't be this person. I couldn't be in the Golf Magazine top 100 teacher list because I'm so young. And I'm like, how in the world does young have anything to do with encouraging and coaching people from a place that they want to be, or from where they are to where they want to be, and be that conduit that takes them there? And when I found that out, that's what gave me, that was really rocket fuel to who I am as a coach, because I realized that all of that was other people's limited mindset versus mine.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mentorship. Sorry, James, well, go ahead.
No, I said I absolutely love that. I was going to throw it to you, David, in a similar question that you asked Virgil, and I asked this not only for the audience, but for me. Kind of like the conversations we have off camera is often me asking David truly for advice. How would you take that concept of not letting other people impose limitations on yourself and relay that to a younger audience or a younger entrepreneur in a way that they could understand?
Yeah, I like to relay that with past thoughts. So if somebody is saying something that is limiting you, it's not what they're saying, it's the relativity of what they're saying, the meaning of what they're saying. And the meaning of what they're saying is directly related to your past. So for example, I use this, if somebody said to me, oh, you know, you're stupid, when I was young, well, as a straight A student, you know, it wouldn't have bothered me because the meaning of my past was not equated to any of the doubts, fears, insecurities, mistakes, setbacks, or failures that I incurred because I was stupid. Even though I was, by the way. But more importantly, if they said to me and made fun of me because I had a big nose, that would hurt my feelings and it would limit me to my own self-image because of how I related or the meaning I gave it to my past, that I was insecure about having a big nose. Now, later on in life, I realized I don't have a big nose. I just have a small face. And that made me feel better about that. So I really try to create relativity from, hey, why does that make you feel this way? And what is it in your past? What failure, mistake, setback, defining moment, historical relevance, genetic or energetic inheritance allows that statement of someone else to diminish your self-image? Because you never will overachieve your own self-image. And that's what Virgil, when somebody tells you, you can't coach because of your age, coaching is bringing the best out of people. That's not age determinative. Mentorship is experience determinative. A mentor needs to give you instruction to get to where you are, where they are. A teacher like Virgil as well can be any age. They just have to teach those steps. So Virgil can take a mentor like Jack Nicklaus, who has given him instruction to get to where Jack Nicklaus is, and he could be a better coach and teacher to have someone get to where Jack Nicklaus is, even though he can't do it because he doesn't have the skills, the genetic and energetic inheritance to do it. Or maybe he didn't have the mindset, whatever the issues were. So I think it's really important that we, with young people, go to their self-image and encourage them at all times that what other people think of you is none of your business. What you think of you is all your business, and it's relative to your past. And if you're not aligning the meaning of the failures, mistakes, and setbacks, defining moments like Rocky to your future, then you're not going to be a Rocky. And that's why that movie resonates with so many people who are trying to pursue their potential regardless of what other people think. It's none of Rocky's business what other people thought of Rocky. And these are very simple lessons, but the simple things to do are simple not to do. I want to thank Virgil Herring for joining us. Good luck at the on your route to the Masters. Once again, your third player, young amateur champion that you'll be with all week. We got a great content series that we'll be doing. Maybe we can convince James Maslow to come and join us at the Masters this year.
I just got my first set of golf clubs. All right. That's my best step. I am well on my way.
You got to use the best coach in the world, James. I'm telling you, I played golf since I was 10. He talked about in one lesson what he can do. Scott Scher, me, Miles Meltzer, and many others are living proof that you go play 18 holes with Virgil, your life and your golf game will be different. I guarantee it. Virgil Herring, I'll
see you
soon.
I'm pretty sure I could just do a simulator with Virgil, my golf game would be different. But overdue. Once we get power back and then I'm back in town, I'm back around mid-April. Virgil, let's get on the horn. I would love to come train a little bit.
Perfect, man. I look forward to seeing you, buddy.
All right. Thanks,
Virgil. Thank you for jumping on.
Right, yeah, man.
All right. James Maslow, takeaway of the day.
My takeaway almost makes me chuckle. I mean, even, you know, sometimes like you joke that you weren't prepared for this. I felt the same way coming on. Normally I'm 10 minutes ahead of time and I was 2 minutes or 1 minute past time. Just logging on to the internet, me being inept with the computer and the new login, just silly things. But I want to, so I guess my two quick takeaways. The personal takeaway is my own mindset shifting, being around other people who spew nothing but positivity and encouragement. That is you and that is Virgil. That's why I love being on the show. That's why I love surrounding myself with people like you guys. Because you could probably see from watching the beginning of this to now, a physical shift in my demeanor, my focus, my happiness, all the things that have actually come of this for me. But then the takeaway I want to pass to Virgil and to you, really what we've spoken about, is none of this is overly complicated. None of it is rocket surgery, as they say. It's baby steps. It's believing in yourself. And then when there's doubt, going back to the mirror and saying, you got this. Write it on a post-it note. There's a tangible takeaway. You got this every day. And you tell yourself, you fake it till you make it, till you actually believe it. Take those baby steps every day. It's a good reminder of me to me as well. So this has been a wonderful episode for me. How about you?
Oh, awesome, man. And I love to have fun with you every single week. It's so good. But I think mine's relative to yours in the respect that those baby steps are normally simple to do. Saying thank you every day is simple to do. And these baby steps over time have significant impact. They accelerate, they aggregate, and they compound exponentially in your divine direction with devotional behaviors. But my takeaway is relative to that because I double down on the simple things. I double down on the baby steps. I double down like you do on the non-negotiables. I remind myself of this takeaway. The simple things to do are simple not to do. And so if we live in that space, we will do the simple things and know that they are difficult to do, even though they're simple to do. The incredible James Maslow going out of his way in a snow and ice storm in Nashville, Tennessee. We appreciate him on the Celebrity Entrepreneur Show. We are making major advancements. I want to tell you that I have a very big meeting with that group. And they have some big plans for us, James. So I got more good news coming
Fantastic.
Your way in your life there. We will see you soon. Remember, most importantly, be more interested than interesting. Be kind to your future self and do good deeds.